Okay, let's begin.
Downstairs, but it never works.
Okay, we have a few minutes. Let's begin. I want to finish up a few very short things from the safe, from the Sefer called Oitzer Haidias Sifas Gershon, and then I want to tell you a few little Dvar Torah from the Sefer Imre Baruch. Out of half the press, I'll explain them in what is the Sefer. Okay, first thing, just to finish from yesterday, the simple question he presents: why didn't Haman decide to destroy the Jewish people on the 13th day of Adar? If Haman made a girl, and the girl came out in Chodesh Adar, so Haman was excited that Adar is the ideal time to destroy the Jewish people because it is the time when Moshe Rabbeinu died. So why didn't he make the Gzerah for Zion Adar? It's not Akasha, because I think that was part of the girl. The girl wasn't just the month. The girl was not just the month, was also the day. So I'm not exactly sure what the question, but even though the question is a weak question, it's a very good answer. Well, maybe this part of what Haman interpreted is that the 13th day of Adar is the 7th day of Avelos of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he explains that we don't I don't even relate to it in this fashion. We assume that the harshest day of a mourning is the first day. But the truth is, we have to ask a psychologist to explain this to us, is that the first day a person is in shock. When it really hurts the most is day 7. Day 7 is when it is
It's not a full day, it's 2 hours.
What? But still, that's the hardest. And in fact, that's why the custom in ancient times was to go to the Beis HaKvaros. Now, it could be the reason why it's Misim Kekuloi is because to give people the opportunity to go to the Beis HaKvaros to say Kel Molei and to actually go and mourn. If you're a person during the first 7 days, you're not supposed to leave the house. On day 7, in a certain way, the Avelus is more intense. So when it says in Chazal that Haman had great Simcha, that it's the Chodesh of the Nisa of Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't just happy that it's the month when Moshe Rabbeinu died. It was on day 13 of the month, and day 13 is the 7th day of Avelos. It's the 7th day of Shiva, and the 7th day of Shiva is the time when Klal Yisrael was in the greatest degree of mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu. And that gives us a great appreciation of Hayom Eila was Nepach Miyagon L'Simcha. On day 13 was the day where it was meant for us. That day turned into be for us a day of where we were able, given permission, to destroy our enemies. Giving permission, we celebrate Purim on day 14, because day 14 is the day that we rested. But on day 13 was the day of war, was the day when we were given permission, v'nahapachu, the day that Haman thought he would be happy to destroy us, which was the day of Avelos, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, and Klal Yisrael was in a deep degree of mourning, was nebach l'simcha u'l'sasa. Okay, that's one idea. Now, another idea related to this thing, it's not here in the Sefer, but I saw this yesterday in a different Sefer. I spent a lot of time in the Sefer. One of the only things that I came out and I really liked is, he asked a very good question: why is it that Mordechai waited until the 23rd day of the 23rd day Shalosh V'Eshrim Bo of which month? Of Chodesh Sivan, in order to send out the second set of letters that the Jewish people are allowed to defend themselves and bear arms. So the question is that the story of Purim took place, the miracle took place on Pesach, the night of Pesach. Haman already sent out the letters on the 13th day, Haman said, I don't remember the dates, but that's not important.
On Pesach.
So the miracle took place on Pesach. So why did he wait until the 23rd day of Sivan to send out the letters?
2 months.
To send out the letters. It was even more than 2 months. You have to make it exactly. He says it was exactly 70 days. I didn't focus on that part of the calculation. He says it was exactly 70 days from the time of the Gezerah until Mordechai sent out the letters telling Klal Yisrael, you have permission from the king to defend yourself on this very day. Seemingly, that took place on Chol Hamoed Pesach. He could have sent the letters immediately. Sakonis Nefashas. So why did he wait all of this time until to send out the letters until the 23rd? What?
He didn't want it to leak.
What did he want to leak?
He didn't want the guy to know what was in the day.
Well, the enemy had to know. The enemy had to know. He didn't wait until a year later. So what is the significance of waiting until the 23rd day of Sivan? So he explains this. I saw this in the Sefer. He says something very interesting. He says that in Megillas Tainis, could be it's also a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, we know that the 23rd day of Sivan was a fast day. Why? It was on this day when Yeravam ben Nevat was Mevatel, the bringing of Bikurim from Klal Yisrael. Yeravam ben Nevat, there were many things that he did in his Malchus. When the Malchus was divided between Rechav and Yeravam ben Nevat, he did not let them be Oil L'Regel, he did not let them made Avodah Zorah and Ber and Basil and Don. He erected idols. But on the 23rd day of Sivan, he was mevatel the bringing of Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. This is what it says in the Megillas Tainis. And it was a fast day. It's a very great tragedy. Bikurim represents Revesa Mereishis Pri Ho'adama, the Reishis. To recognize that the Reishis of your produce is a gift to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The story of Purim captures the fall, the defeat of Amalek, who is also called Reishis. Reishis Goyim Amalek. The Muhammad of Amalek against Klal Yisrael is, how dare you think that you are the Reishis? You think that you are the purpose of creation? We are the Reishis. Reishis Goyim Amalek. And their influence destroyed everything that was Begeder Reishis. Mordechai Bedavka went and wanted to be Mesakin, wanted to focus on the time of bringing Bikurim, the tragedy of when Bikurim was bottled, and Bedavka on this day to Mahapech, a day of a tragedy of Reishis, to a day of a Simcha of Reishis. This day when Yeravam ben Nevat was Mevatel the Reishis Pri Ho'adama will be the day when we will send out the messengers to tell the world that Amalek is not the Reishis. They think Reishis Goyim Amalek, it's not incorrect. They are nothing special. Okay, let's go to another idea. Let's talk about Hamantashen. We discussed already at length Hamantashen. I came across some new ideas relating to Hamantashen. Why does a Hamantashen have three corners? So he brings here from the Oitzer Dinim. I don't know what the Sefer is. There's a tradition that the hats, I'm sure you've all seen this. If you watch Megillas Luster, they show you the hat of the triangular hat. Is that correct? We know that from a historical point of view. Is that correct? That they wore triangular hats, so therefore they bedafka wore those hats. Alright, that's an interesting idea. He then says something very interesting. He says a triangle is the smallest thing that produces corners. A box also has corners, but the smallest thing which emphasizes corners is a triangle. The pasuk says
the fewest sides of a closed figure
which produces a corner is we represent the pasuk of Ikarne Rishoyim Agadeya. It's a pasuk. The corners of the Rishoyim I will cut off, and there's a pasuk and Tiroimamna Karne Tzadik. There's a contrast between when we describe the contrast between the fall of the wicked and the rise of the tzaddik, it's described in terms of the corners. The karne rishohim agadeya, teray mamna karne tzaddik. And the Medrash interprets this pasuk. This refers to Haman versus Mordechai. So since we have here this reference to corners, he suggests from the, it's not his own, he's quoting from the Oitzer Dinim, that's why we focus on eating something in this particular shape. And then he quotes an Alshech. This is a very interesting thing. Let me give you a little hakdama to this Alshech. We all know that on Chanukah we play with the dreidel. And the most popular reason why, there are many reasons why we play with the dreidel, but the most popular legend is that in the time of the Yevanim, it was a 50-year time of Shmad, the children were not allowed to learn Torah. And the parents were desperate to teach the children Torah, so they had a game. They played with the dreidel, and they used that as a cover for the Yevanim in case the Yevanim would come and inspect, what are you doing? Are you teaching the children Torah? They were sure not teaching them Torah, we're playing games, we're playing dreidel. So because they were able to learn Torah through using the cover of the dreidel, that's why the minhag became to play with the dreidel. So he says something fascinating. He says that Mordechai, he worked for the Mossad. And he had to sneak messages. This is what it says in the Al-Sheikh. Okay, the Al-Sheikh is a pretty standard commentator. You can trust the Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh says that Mordechai, he worked for the Mossad, and he had to send secret messages to Esther. Secret messages from Shushan, Shushan Abira, different cities. The way he sent the messages was in Haman Tashin. They made food, and they folded the dough, and they filled it up. They filled it up with food.
Fortune cookies.
And that's how he sent coded messages. Shocking, shocking thing. Mimela, so we preserve.
They invented the fortune cookies.
So it's a shocking idea. That's why we said on the Russian. Then he says something very bizarre here, and he's very critical. As Sifas Gershon, he discussed it at great length, but he quotes sources and he says the reason why we eat Hamantashen is to be kind of the pasuk, and it's not clear what this means. We eat a Hamantashen, Haman. It's not there is machshava drush. Is it's not a coincidence that the man in the Torah, that the man that the Jewish people ate for 40 years in the desert, is called Haman. Es Haman Ochlu Arboim Shon. Now, the hay is a hay hayidia. It's not part of the Shoresh. Yet, the Pasuk always refers to Haman, to the degree where the Darshanim say it has somehow become part of the... It's not a coincidence that Haman is the same letters as Es Haman Ochlu Arboim Shon. Now, the only thing which comes to mind, and pun intended, is, you'll see what I mean in a moment, is that Chazal tell us that the man had the taste of the machshava of the person. If you had a desire to eat grapes, the man tasted like grapes. If you had a machshava to eat basar, the man tasted like basar, and so on and so forth. The Gemara, there's an entire Daf Gemara. Chazal said there was no one that knew how to disparage the Jewish people like Haman HaRasha. And the Gemara gives a number of examples of what Haman said, what he was thinking. The Gemara concludes, everything that you thought is correct. Every machshava that you can possibly, any negative machshava that you could ascribe to Haman is correct. Any negative thing that they have the same principle. Just like the man, it took on the machshava of the one who ate it. Haman, the richest of Haman, it spans the history of the world. Any evil machshava that a person can have against a Jew is all nichlal in Haman. All the machshava. So there is some type of similarity between the two. Zelu mazeh. Vayoichlu es Haman arboim shana. They ate the man, which in this context means that we finish him off. We consume. Achila means to consume, to do away with. I don't know, I'm just throwing this out. It's something that's very different. It's off the beaten track. And it needs further clarification. Okay. Let me jump ahead to the Sefer Imre Bruch. This Sefer is hot off the press. I got a copy. It is written by Harav Baruch Simon. Baruch Simon is a Rosh HaYeshiva in YU, Ritz. I know my family knows him because he married a girl from the Lower East Side.
Keller,
you know the girl who he married? He got married when he was a little bit older. And somehow, since he got married to a girl from the Lower East Side, my parents always... Okay, whatever it is, but he is a very popular Rosh Yeshiva in YU, and he wrote a number of svarim. He wrote, I think, 5 volumes on Chumash, and he recently published a very interesting sefer on the Minhagim. Fascinating sefer. Imre Baruch, that's the name of his son. Soyvei v'cholech b'inyonei minhag. It's lumdus. It's more lumdus than it is actual a record of Minhagim. He has 2 chapters on Purim. So let me just briefly run through the essence of what he says in these 2 chapters. First chapter, he talks about a very lumdus shayla, beautiful shayla. Here's the question. Question is as follows. We lay in the Megillah. Let's come to the very last pasuk. The very last pasuk of the Megillah is... Ki Mordechai Hayudi Mishneh LeMelech HaChashverosh. Most people, the minhag Yisrael is when the Balkari reaches that pasuk, everyone in the Balkari stops, and everyone in the tzibur recites the pasuk, and then the Balkari reads the pasuk from the Megillah. The problem is, what happens if you're listening to the Megillah, you miss a word, you miss a pasuk, there's too much noise, the clapping haman, you don't hear a couple of words, so it says in the Shulchan Aruch that you should read what you're missing from a chumash. And yotza, you've heard the whole Megillah, you've heard most of it from the Baal Korei who has read the Megillah from a kosher Megillah, and you've heard a miut, a minority from yourself, you've read the missing words from a chumash, that's good enough. You don't have to hear every single word from the kosher Megillah. You can be yoytze even if you hear some of the words bal peh from yourself. But it's not a lechatchila. Lechatchila, it's ideal to hear every single word from the kosher Megillah. That's the lechatchila. It's only a bidyevet if you don't hear every single word, so you can make up what you're missing by reading it from a chumash what you're missing. Problem is, when you come to the end of the Megillah, and we lay in that last pasuk, you're to the Megillah. By you laying that last pasuk yourself, not listening to the Baal Korei, when you get to the very end, v'rotzu l'roiv echav, you have already fulfilled the mitzvah of the Megillah b'di'evet, you're done. So now, you're telling me, so, and b'di'evet is not a good thing. It's not a good thing to be yotze mitzvah b'di'evet. You want to be yotze mitzvah l'chatchila. So you'll tell me, well, he's in the Baal Korei is going to read it again. He's going to read it again from the Megillah, and that's going to make it l'chatchila. So he connects this to the question, the famous question from the Briskerov. You have in front of you two esroigim. One esrog is a sofek murkov. I don't know, is it a kosher esrog? Maybe it's a lemon. But if it's a lemon, it's the most gorgeous, it's the most expensive lemon I've ever seen. It's the hidurim are one of a kind. But it could very well be that it's not an esrog, it's a lemon. If it's an esrog, you're not going to find anywhere in the world such a beautiful mechudar. And then sitting next to it, you have an esrog that is 100% kosher esrog. It's as ugly as sin. So the question posed to the Briskerov, which one should you take first? Should you take first the esrog that's a stunning, gorgeous esrog, but it's a sofek that it might not even be an esrog? Or should you take first the ugly esrog? So he says, he take first, so the average person without knowing the issues would say, well, of course, you should take the one that's vaday kosher. Right? Isn't that a logical thing? The one that's vaday kosher. Okay, it's not so nice, it's not so beautiful, it's not a mehudar, but it's kosher. It's kosher. So you first, yoitza, I'm kosher. Then after I was yoitza, the one that's kosher, you could take the other esrog. I'll be mahader just in case this is kosher esrog. Oh, I was yoitza also the most beautiful, beautiful esrog. So the Briskerov says it's a big mistake because you only have one chance to make a first impression. Now that's an English expression, but in halacha it means you only have one chance to be mahader. To be yoitza, you can be yoitza mitzvah a million times. This is a tremendous chiddush. You can be yoitza mitzvah a million times. Go around to shul and pick up everyone's esrog one after another, non-stop. But to be yoitza hidur, you only get one chance. Only one chance to be yoitza hidur. Therefore, if you're going to take the esrog that's vadai kosher, so you yoitza the mitzvah with whatever degree of hidur you yoitza. Now when you take the other esrog and you're trying to chaperein hidur, it's too late. Once you yoitza the mitzvah, it's too late to be yoitza. There's never, it's better to take the esrog that's sofik kosher, sofik not kosher, because on the tzad that it is kosher, by being yoitza with that esrog, you're being yoitza for the very first time hidur. You only get one chance to be yoitza hidur when you do the mitzvah the very first time. In the event that it's not kosher, then you'll go back and you'll use the other. So therefore, Baruch Simon, I'm not sure it's on his own, but he brings down the Shailas, but following the Shaila, that's the same exact thing. When you get to the last pasuk of the Megillah, if you're going to listen, so you're going to lay in the Megillah, Baal Peh, the Mordechai Yotzam, Kiyoish Mordechai, Rotz Godel, whatever the last pasuk says, the last pasuk of Rotz, the Rei Vechav, it's over. The Darish Tov Le'amo, it's over. The Megillah now is over. You have fulfilled it bidyevet. Now when the Baal Kori is going to the mitzvah, you have completed the mitzvah. There's nothing really more to do. The mitzvah is complete, and it has been complete begeder be'oifan b'di'evet. It was not read to me from a kosher Megillah. If I have a kosher Megillah, then I have no problem. But if it's been read to me from the... If I have a chumash in front of me, I don't have a kosher Megillah, I'm reading it on a piece of paper, and I read those last words, v'ratzu l'roi ve'chav, the mitzvah is over! And I was yoytze the mitzvah b'oifan b'di'evet. And now you want to go back and read the pasuk nochamol to fulfill the mitzvah a second time. And this time we're going to be mashal the mitzvah a second time b'oifan l'chatchila. It's too little, too late. Now let me explain. He explains this very well. He writes, Sefer is very well written. Everything he writes is clear. Let me explain. Yeah.
The question you began with was, how can we do this lichatchila? Now you're telling me it's bidyevet.
That's really part of the question. Why are we allowed to do this? Now let me just clarify one point, maybe become clear. Why am I asking this question only with regard to the last pasuk? Why don't we ask the question with regard to the more than the first three times? We recite four psuk in the first three. There it's not a question, because there when you say the first three psukim, you have not yet fulfilled the mitzvah.
Right.
The mitzvah ain't over yet. So it's like you didn't even pick up an estrich. You first can say you fulfilled the mitzvah when you get to the very, very end. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah yet. So therefore, I said a pasuk. Big deal. Now the Baal Kori said the pasuk. So when the Baal Kori said the pasuk, he made the chatchila. And I didn't yet fulfill the mitzvah. You only have this problem when you get to the very last pasuk, because then you pass the point beyond return. Now the mitzvah is over. It's like I've picked up the ugly esrog. I picked up the esrog that's not mehudar. The mitzvah is over. Once the mitzvah's over, it's too late now to be mehader and upgrade the mitzvah into a gedav or lechatchila, because we are working with the assumption that a difference between bidyevet and lechatchila is equivalent to mehudar versus not mehudar. That is the assumption. So this is a very difficult question. A lot of the poskim are mefalpel of this custom.
It goes even further than that.
Yeah.
Because you have to have the first pasuk and the last pasuk, right?
The last pasuk has to be in order to be going.
The question is, is it a din in the Megillah itself? Or
okay, so he briefly mentions that, and he says that's not a problem. That the beginning and the end is only an issue in the ksiva of the Megillah, but not in the Kriya. He actually discussed that. So this is a very difficult question. How could it be a minhag Yisrael? The whole Sefer is focused on minhagim. This idea is that, in fact, Nasifas Gershon, that I quoted, is shocking. You study, we live in the melting pot. In America, everything is just one big minhag. It's not the way it used to be. It used to be that in many shuls they didn't bedafka not recite the last pasuk. Instead, they recited the pasuk Balayla Hahu Nodudosh Nas Hamelech. Everyone said that pasuk, and they didn't say this last. This pasuk is a new modern phenomenon. We say this pasuk. How could it be a minhag to say a pasuk when by saying the pasuk you're ruining your obligation? So he says. So what do you want to say? Like Rav Meir alluded that when you say the pasuk, Nuchum Shemesh of Kavana. Not to be Yitzah. It's a tremendous doichik to say that. We don't find in any Pesach, B'li Yitzah Min HaKlal, that makes mention of such a thing. So how are you talking? How could there be such a thing? So after his Mephabel, he basically says, and she tries to show this from other examples, he goes into long discussion about Yom Kippur, is that there's a fundamental difference between a Bidi'eved L'chatchila versus Mehudar and Namhudar. He brings it a very beautiful Yisoyt. Hidur is not the same as bidyeved and lichatchila. When you do a mitzvah bidyeved, it's a very big yisod. It's a powerful yisod for life. You have not, the mitzvah is not complete. You have not done the mitzvah. And it's not too late to do it again the proper way to get full credit. Hidur is a different league. When you pick up the estrog may be not for your taste. It's not mehudar. But it's a kosher esrog. You're lacking hidur. A lack of hidur is not in the league of bidyevet. You're yoytze lichatchila, the mitzvah of esrog, when you pick up the esrog. Now you want to chaperayin hidur? Too little, too late. You only get one chance to do hidur. When you do a mitzvah that's only bidyevet, it's not too late. Ein achnami when you lay in the Megillah and you will read the last pasuk in achnami, you said am yaitz b'diavet. It's not too late to now for the balkari to read the pasuk, and now I get credit like doing the mitzvah b'oifan lechatchila. And the yisoid, the dvar musa, we take away from this halacha, this pilpul and minig is, many times in life we have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, we all say, b'diavet it's good. B'diavet it's good. And therefore, I don't have to be from the machmir. I don't have patience. I don't have time. I don't have the mind for it. I'm happy with the b'diavet. That's because we are unfortunately viewing b'diavet in our mind the same way we look at mechudar. When you go to the store to buy an esrog, I'm not going to go spend $500 for an esrog. Come on. Take me to the back room, the lefnai, the lefnim, to show me the most expensive. For me, it's good enough. $60 already. How much do I want? That's valid. That's 100% value, not mechuyev. But when you take that inyan of hider, and you start using that same frame of mind when it comes to a nitzah, buy a pair of tefillin. And they tell you, you have an option. Either you spend $1,000 and it's kosher b'diavet. That's not an example, because really $1,000, I mean, some of these are things I'm a hidurim. I shouldn't really say, you're very dangerous. But when you're told in advance that this type of fulfillment is only b'diavet versus this is a lechatchila, you got to be careful. You learn from the Megillah, there's a difference between a b'diavet and lechatchila, and a mitzvah that's mehud and a mitzvah that's not mehud. Okay, so this is in a nutshell, one chapter from a safe. There's another thing, maybe we'll do that tomorrow or another time.